It is Saturday, March 14th, 2015. Happy Pi Day. We're broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio 88.9 and KUSP.org. And ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for Geek Speak. Well, welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or any of the geeks' affiliated organizations. I'm geek translator Bonnie Primsch, and with me in the air studio is Lyle Troxell. Hello, senior user interface engineer at Netflix. How's it going, Lyle?
Quite well, thank you.
Also, Ben Jaffe, a teacher, web developer, traveler, and music geek.
You had no problem with that one.
Yeah, hey, once I got hit.
You said we were in an air studio. That sounds so much cooler than the room that we're sitting in.
Okay. Do you mean for, like, to be a it real air like studio, there needs to be more graphics on the upholstery or something?
I was imagining
float.
In some kind of flying room with glass floors.
Like Howl's Moving Castle or something.
Yeah.
Something like
though, we're surrounded by music. I always love this room because we're surrounded by CDs.
Yeah, it's good.
Thousands and thousands of them.
It feels like a radio station.
It does.
Guys, we're dedicating the episode today to beloved science fiction and fantasy writer Sir Terence David John Terry Pratchett, who passed away at 66 years of age. Last week. Too soon, by the way. He had early onset Alzheimer's. And, more importantly, at one point, he was the highest selling author in England.
Yeah, and Sir Terry David John Pratchett, known as Terry, was appointed officer of the Order of the British Empire, which means he was knighted for his services in literature in 1998. He's the author of the best known, his best known series is Discworld, a series of 40 volumes. The first book in that series is The Color of Magic, which is a great book. In fact, the whole series is fantastic.
Yeah.
40 volumes.
Yeah, he wrote a lot. Prolific writer. So,
yeah, he got to work.
He did. And there's actually a two-part miniseries television show called The Color of Magic, which is placed in that world. And I ran into it accidentally, and knowing the book for years, ran it accidentally. I'm like, oh, what?
Brain explode!
It was great. It was really fun. Anyway, it's a lot of fantasy and tongue-in-cheek humor. And in fact, he tweeted a lot about his Alzheimer's and his passing away, and so did his literature friends, and all of it with a lot of tongue-in-cheek. So if you look for Pratchett's Twitter feed mentions, mm-hmm. there are things like quotes from his book about walking hand-in-hand with the devil out of the room with death out of the room and stuff. He's a great guy. His favorite book of mine is Good Omens, The Nice and Accurate Prophecies of Angus Nutter, Witch. And this is a collaboration with Neil Gaiman, and Bonnie, you'd love this book. It's
I
a
bet
blast.
I would.
The book is a comedy about the birth of the son of Satan, of course, and the second coming, the end of times, and the attempts of two angels an angel and a demon who really like Earth and doesn't want it to end, so they try to thwart the second coming without telling their masters.
That's clearly I need to catch up.
Oh, it's great.
On my Terry Pratchett.
So to a definite cheers on Pi Day to Terry Pratchett.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Here.
Really wonderful author.
So a lot of gratitude for Terry Pratchett for his works, and gratitude also for people who've made this show possible. We just had a big pledge drive at the radio station that supports this show.
Yeah, there were a lot of over 700 people who contributed during the fundraiser. So thank you very much. And two people we do want to call out, Dexter from Michigan and Jim from Central Jersey. Thank you guys for donating. And it is, of course, never too late to support the station at KUSP.org.
And we're specifically mentioning those two fellows because they donated after listening to the podcast of us yakking away about donating.
Woo-hoo.
So they're not even in the region that we broadcast in. They're in the podcast region. And so I definitely welcome anybody else that listens to the podcast to donate.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. That's welcome anytime.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Well, we are celebrating Pi Day today. We started a couple weeks ago with the episode from February 28th, Live Long and Prosper, Net Neutrality. And in that, there was a belabored discussion of kind of a Pratchettian, Douglas Adamsian file storage system.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just to back up for a second, the reason why today is Pi Day is March 14th.
And 2015.
It's a special Pi Day because the next two digits of Pi are 1-5, which is
the
year, as Ben just said. Mm-hmm. And earlier we bombed Dawn on her show because she happened to be on at 9:26, which is the next three digits, 9:26 and 53 seconds. So a very long Pi Day date reference today, and that's why we're calling it Pi Day. In fact, we have pie in the room we're going to be eating after the show.
Yeah.
People that are local to the station know that this place. Come on down, have some pie.
Come
if you like.
We have
way too much pie.
We do have too much pie.
So listener Glenn, after we talked about the Pi file system joke, and not really a joke, but a story about Pi file system.
Sort of an amusing thought bobble.
Yeah. If you're curious, listen to February 28th. We definitely cover it on that show. Glenn of Santa Cruz says, I didn't get the Pi file system joke either, but I realized a great utility of such a file system. You could find within it the DNA sequence of monkeys and then instructions for building a typewriter, and then you wouldn't need to search for all the works of Shakespeare.
Now, perhaps because of that, I said, gee, you know, there is something very Douglas Adams about the whole idea of a Pi file system. And of course, the monkeys and the typewriters trying to make Shakespeare show up in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, perhaps his most famous work. It is, by the way, the 40th anniversary of the publication of that book.
That's a great book.
Fantastic.
And that, just to point out that that was the first in the volume of five books making up the trilogy.
There's a trilogy.
Yeah, it's a trilogy
of five
books.
It's The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy trilogy consisting of five books.
That is perfect. It's so funny when you mentioned Hitchhiker's Guide and we talked about Terry Pratchett, they, to my mind, have very similar humors in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah.
So that
kind
of stuff collects.
Yeah.
Must be the British humor kind of thing.
Yeah, which I love.
So
I love
today's Pi Day. Yeah.
Yeah, wait, no, hold on.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to point out that if people are feeling a little bit of a Jones for getting like a little hitchhiker fix, 10 years ago for the 30th anniversary, the BBC Radio 4 put up an online version of the text adventure game, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which I had back in the day and have forgotten how to play.
You had that? Oh,
there's pocket lint here. Yeah, there's a babblefish here. So you can go, we're providing a link up at our website to get to that online.
And it's online version of that. Oh, I've got to play that game. That sounds fantastic.
It's so fun.
So you have to get your towel and
well, you have to try and get out of the room first. Very tricky. Anyway. So Pi Day.
Book. Okay.
Let's have some facts about pie.
We didn't cover pie very well last week. We didn't talk about, or a few weeks, we didn't really talk.
Maeve mentioned it a bit.
Yeah, I mentioned it a bit. But so here's something about pie. So pie, first off, the number. I won't read it all out because it would take an infinite amount of time. But in 1706, pi was the symbol pi, the Greek letter pi, was chosen as the symbol for pi because the P, that symbol, represented perimeter. So the reason why the pi symbol is assigned to the number pi has to do with circles and perimeter.
So it looks like the Greek letter for the sound, or for the P, for perimeter.
No, the letter was first.
The
letter is pi.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
It existed as a letter.
So what is it? It's a mathematical constant. Mm-hmm. It's true in all situations. It is the ratio of the circle's circumference to that of its diameter. So if you look at the width of a circle, and then that's the diameter.
Okay.
And then if you look along the edge of the circle, if you could measure that perfectly, if you divide those two, you get 3.145. The diameter the circumference is about three times as big as the diameter, but it's 3.1415. 92653.
Right.
I now know because of the date.
Yeah.
So that's kind of neat and everything. But the thing that's interesting about pi is that it is an irrational number, which means that you can't contain it in thought. Your mind can't comprehend pi. It's not rational. So that's kind of the concept of rationality.
Is it?
It goes on.
There's more technical terms, but that's the way we'll talk about it here.
Okay.
Not getting too much into detail.
I'll go for it.
It's also transcendental. And that
transcendental.
Transcendental, which I love because I've always known transcendental from the Santa Cruz upbringing as a very spiritual thing.
Yeah,
but it has a second definition.
I was going to ask you because it says in our little notes here, pi is irrational and transcendental, which to me means it's a spiritual thing that's hard to reason with.
Yeah.
But
it's the transcendental actually refers to it never repeating. That's actually what that means.
Okay.
And sort of a technical definition.
I had the definition up here. Second, I'll read it to you. A number, the definition for transcendental, the second definition, number, i.e. E or pi, real but not a root. Sorry, this definition. A real but not the root of an algebraic equation with rational roots. So meaning that its roots are rational, but it's not rational. And therefore, it's a transcendental number. Let's not get more into that because it's radio.
That's deep, man.
So layman's terms, it goes on forever without repeating.
That's right.
But really much more interesting to mathematicians.
It's really fascinating for mathematicians and computer science people. But, of course, it's a fun day, too. It happens every March 14th, and this one happens to be special.
So what's it used for?
Well, it's used in all geometry. I mean, it's basically this one of these constants that we use whenever we do things. If you wanted to build a structure, Pi would come in handy while you're trying to measure things, while you're trying to figure it out. If you wanted to build a circular thing, you could test the perfectness of your circle.
Is it truly circular? Okay.
Yeah, that's part of it. The other thing that's interesting about Pi, though, from actual construction perspective, which where it first emerged as such an important thing is actual construction and laying out things and figuring out star systems, things of that nature. You don't really need more than like four digits to do anything in the physical world. After you get 3.1415, you're kind of done. That's all you really need to figure out if you're perfect in your measurements.
I remember the 9.2 as well. Because, I don't know, four digits seems like not very many.
Yeah.
But then again, orders of magnitude are really big. So.
Out of respect for how long that numbers goes on, you're deigning to remember six digits, not just four. Okay. All right. Well, I think that shows proper respect. In Pi Day news, Jennifer Mahal of the Santa Cruz Children's Museum of Discovery, or MOD, alerts us to their Pi Day celebration, which they're calling Pi a la MOD. That's pretty good.
Oh, no.
She says the museum, which serves people up to 12 years old, is doing Pi-related crafts today and demonstrations and serving Pi cookies from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Capitola Mall. That's where the museum is based. And they'll do a walking Pi demonstration at the Circle near Wetzel's Pretzels at 11 a.m. So those of you who are local to the area, you can check that out. And we'll have a link to their website.
And that, of course, is the circular fountain at that
location. The circular fountain in the middle of the mall. So that'll be a nice demonstration.
If you're
in a hurry, it's sccmod.org/pi-day.
And you ask what it's used in. Of course, it's known for trigonometry and geometry. It's also in cosmology, number theory, statistics, fractals, thermodynamics, mechanics, and electromagnetism. All of those fields rely upon it. So it's important.
It's important. Mm-hmm. It's important. Also, on the topic of dates of mention, commemorating and anniversaries and such.
Yes, it is the 30th birthday. This is tomorrow, actually. March 15th, mm-hmm. Tomorrow, is the 30th birthday of the oldest.com.
Oh.
Anyone want to guess what it is?
The domain name?
What's the oldest domain name? .com.
It's not AOL?
Not AOL.
What is it?
Wait.
IRC? No.
I'm not going to know this. Oh, I'm so frustrated.
I'll give you five more seconds to... two.
Got it.
One.
Got me. What is it?
See, I thought it was going to be something like a.com or like...
the.com?
It's symbolics.com.
Whoa. What is symbolics.com?
That's deep, man.
What happens there?
It's transcendental.
What happens there is you get a loading screen for several seconds because I think a lot of people are visiting it given that it's almost the 30th birthday.
What's
and people
called?
Are writing articles. Symbolics.com.
I'm going to go
and
there.
And now you guys are going to contribute to its slow loading time.
We're here to
because
help.
Because there's nothing really there.
Oh. It's blue.
I mean, there's a website. There's a website for a company, but it just doesn't seem to be really very much.
Well, there's a lot you can click on. Then what happens?
Yeah, there are a lot of things you can click on. Yes, there are. But what they do and where they go, I'm not sure.
And stuff. I don't know. Okay.
Anyway, so it was actually registered by Lisp computer maker Symbolics Inc. Anyone know where Symbolics Inc. is headquartered today? Nowhere. They went out of business a decade ago.
Oh, so is this a dead site then?
It's not a dead site because it was sold to XF.com Investments, whose CEO said, hey, it's really special for us to own the first domain because it's historical and whatever. But okay. And
it went online March 15th, 1985.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Huh. Well, it's looking good.
30 years minus one day ago.
Looking good.
Yeah, very cool.
So, there it is. Happy almost 30th birthday, symbolics.com.
Do you guys know about Zumba.com?
No.
Zumba with a U?
I trust that I am about to find out more.
Is that
God,
the
I think
that
workout Zumba.com. Cover? That's right, Zumba.com. Oh, Zumba.com is a great one to visit. Is it still up?
What
is Zumba.com? All it is a flash thing that says, you have reached Zumba.com. This is Zumba.com.
Oh, and it just repeats
itself. Oh, it's just
announces
great.
Itself?
Oh,
yeah.
To Zumba.com.
Zumba.com.
This is Zumba.com.
This thing goes on for hours, doesn't it?
Welcome.
That's great.
This is Zumba.com.
And it just keeps going. And then it finally says, you have been here. You are here at Zumba.com. That was just great. And that's, I don't know, that's early 90s. It's late 90s, definitely, is when it emerged.
I love all the sort of amusement bobble, website toys and stuff like that have
come up. Like the dancing hamsters.
Like the dancing
hamsters.
Oh, my God. Yeah. All right. Well, guys, we like to be an interactive show. Maybe you've got some ideas for what you would like us to cover, some topics that you're curious about. If so, you can submit your requests for things the geeks should take up a number of ways. You can either email us, of course, at geeks@geekspeak.org. You can reach us via Twitter at KUSPGeeks. That's all one word. If you have any questions or comments for us or topic suggestions, send us a tweet and we'll respond either today during the show or collect them up and respond next week. It's Geek Speak here on KUSP. Another fine show on KUSP is the 7th Avenue Project with Robert Pauly. This week, MIT physicist Max Tegmark's penchant for following scientific ideas to sometimes crazy-sounding conclusions has earned him the nickname Mad Max. But there's a method to his madness, and even his wildest notions are based on solid reasoning. He and host Robert Pauly discuss some of those notions and Max Tegmark's quest to understand the ultimate nature of reality. That's on the 7th Avenue Project this Sunday at noon on KUSP, or anytime you like from the talk section of the station's website, kusp.org. Right now, you're listening to Geek Speak on KUSP. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch, and with me in the air room is Lyle Troxell and Ben Jaffe. Let's have a little Apple Fest! Apple Fest! Apple Fest! Did we get apple pie?
I didn't get apple pie.
No.
Oh.
All right.
Guys, pumpkin pie always wins.
I didn't get to pumpkin pie either. I got cherry and blackberry. Yeah.
We will eat your berry pies.
Oh, thank you. The cherry has a little heart on it, so anyway.
It's wrong fruit. That's not the fruit of discussion right now.
Apple released new stuff on Monday.
New stuff.
Apple did. They had an event on Monday, and they announced a bunch of things, one of which was Research Kit. We actually talked about that. We when we crashed Dr. Don's show to talk about pie, we also talked about Research Kit on her show. And it's basically, it's an open source thing that allows medical researchers to create apps and use the iPhone as a diagnostic tool.
Yeah, it's kind of an extension from the Health Kit.
Open source app for an Apple thing?
Well, I wouldn't say it's open source. It's a platform for developing research stuff.
But people outside of Apple can actually develop on it too?
Yeah. So what Apple has done is they have HealthKit, which is part of iOS 8. And HealthKit basically is this centralized location for all health information on your iPhone. Hey. And the general idea is if you have a passcode on your phone, your phone is actually encrypted. And this data is also in your phone and it's encrypted. And it's protected by your password and then sometimes by your thumbprint when you
unlock. And so you take it to the doctor and say, this is what's wrong.
You can actually export it to your doctor. You can also choose apps to have access to it. So if some medical facility or something has some app that you want to have data pouring into, like your sleep monitor, for example, might have an app that would take sleep information and put it in your phone. Right. And then the data would be held in one place called HealthKit. And the real idea Apple's doing this is that they want to centralize and protect your medical information so you're in control of it. The Research Kit basically allows people to do research projects and then allow people to participate with their medical information.
Oh.
So you can then share some of your information with the
researchers. You can participate in studies and stuff like that right from your phone.
Yeah.
Is this a thing? I've got some sort of like a health center thing on my iPhone 6 Plus, and it's things like, how many steps did you take today?
Yes.
And because my phone is so large, I don't necessarily carry it around with me all the time, so it's useless.
Well, so when you get...
It's useless on a 6 Phone Plus.
So the other thing they talked about is the watch. We'll get into that in a second. But when you wear that, you'll wear that all the time, and then it will collect those steps and put it in your phone's health kit.
If you're wearing the iWatch or the Apple
Yeah,
watch.
That's the idea. You can wear other things. Fitbits also has an app. So if you wear a Fitbit, the data actually goes into health kit. Then it's centralized in that location. And the idea is really to allow the user to own their medical information. So the Research Kit, a whole bunch of people are doing things in it. They have got 5 apps already out. There's a research project for Parkinson's disease, diabetes, asthma, breast cancer, and cardiovascular disease. And all of these have the app that you download on your phone. You can do things like if you're curious about Parkinson's or want to help on the research of Parkinson's, you can participate. And this app will remind you regularly to tap on 2 different points on the phone. And by collecting data with a lot of people in a long period of time, you potentially could see early onset Parkinson's disease in this research paper.
Wow, that's cool.
And the reason it's so cool is that most of the time, the reason why research is so expensive, so difficult, is to get people to join the study.
Right.
It's expensive.
Yeah.
You have to pay people and all that. So there's just Apple's kind of producing a platform so it's easier to do this. And it looks like to me they're also doing the whole privacy concern really well, because they're talking about how if you want to participate in this study, you have to choose which things you're going to share with the study. And it seems to be you're in control, which is cool.
That is cool.
That seems nice.
Okay.
So that's Research Kit.
Two other things that they announced that I just want to cover. Well, actually,
Apple.
Yeah, three other things. One, I want to mention that iOS 8.2 is available today, and then a couple days later, Google was like, "Hey, us too. Android 5.1 is available today." So, you know, there's that.
Updates for people. And do I want iOS 8.2 or do I want to wait?
I have not looked into it enough to have an opinion.
Yeah. Okay, it's just released today.
My assumption is that you probably will end up getting it.
Well,
because that's generally the way Apple iOS updates work. But there's also a new MacBook and a new Apple Watch. So I guess we'll talk about these one by one. First, we'll talk about the MacBook. Mm-hmm. So the MacBook, it's lighter than all of their other offerings. It's really thin. It's got a great display, blah, 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 blah. Mm. But there is one issue that people have been bringing up. And
right. Yeah, this, I've heard something about, like, there's only one port or it's a different port. There's not even a USB port anymore. And my mm-hmm. whole thing is, wait a minute. I'm new to this Apple world, as you know. I'm already dealing with, like, oh, I can't use that adapter that I use for everything else because it doesn't fit on my machine.
Yeah, so you need some...
This whole proprietary... Yeah, yeah. There's a sort of a consternating trend toward exclusively proprietary ports at Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Well said.
So, my fist.
I see the fist shaking, yeah.
A pedant would say that there are technically two ports. There's the USB-C port on the left-hand side, and there's the headphone port on the right-hand side.
Wait, what's a USB-C?
So USB-C is a new standard, and basically the idea is that this USB-C port will be used for your for connecting any external displays, for connecting any USB devices, for connecting your laptop to power.
I hear that I'm going to need another adapter.
That's my main concern, too. And actually, when they announced this, I looked across Apple's website, and I found all these references to the new MacBook, but I did not find any references or pictures of the dongles that I would have to buy if I bought
one. Right.
And a couple days later, they released a couple pictures, but they're all the very simple dongles, you know, like the USB-C to DVI or to HDMI or to a USB hub or something.
And so they all look... You can, like, plug in your USB-C port and then have just, like, a fan of other stuff that it plugs into.
Well, see, typical Apple, these things are pretty slick and clean and nice. They have a USB port, another USB-C port, and the thing you're trying to add, like the video screen or the FireWire connector, whatever it is.
Right.
But... Yeah, you don't get enough, really.
But here's my point.
And they're $80.
Here's my point. They make a huge deal about how this new MacBook is the lightest ever at 2 pounds, and it's 13.1 millimeters at its thickest point. And that's like, all right, so from a technical perspective, that's incredible engineering. Yes.
Yeah. Well, what about the sturdiness perspective?
What about the dongles I have to carry around?
Yeah, so, like, how many of those do I
like, I don't. I would rather have it be... 15.1 millimeters at its thickest point and have several ports so I can just plug in the various peripherals that I and my friends have. Now, one of the rebuttals to this is that we're increasingly living in a wireless world, and yet I still can't help but think, why do I still have problems pairing my external Apple keyboard with Bluetooth maybe one every three or one every four times? You know, like, we are living in a wireless world in theory if everything goes well, but everything doesn't go well, you know, like you end up with these issues.
Yeah. And the thing is, there's this giant history of different types. And as we see, the transitions are always painful. But let me remind you that Apple used to have optical drives. They don't anymore. They're one of the first to stop doing that. They're one of the first to stop using floppies, right? Mm-hmm. Older technologies, Apple's pretty good about closing down. And one thing that is kind of nice is that they do have a proprietary connector called the Lightning connector on the iPhones. They didn't use that. They use the USB-C3, which is a standard, which is nice. It provides power. It's a 12-pin pinout, and it's reversible. So, you know, right now when you plug in a USB port, it's hard to plug in half the time. That's because it's upside down.
Actually, I saw a diagram talking about the quantum states of USB that it will never go in either way until you observe it.
It's so true.
So it's more than half the time.
I'm excited by the USB port. The thing that's weird
exciting to me.
They got rid of the MagSafe connector, which is one of those wonderful things where you can't, by tripping on a power cord, kick a laptop off the desk.
I trip on my power cord all the time.
And it pops out and nothing happens?
Nothing happens anymore.
But no, I was the pedant that said, no, there's two ports, dude. Because there is a 3.5 millimeter TRRS with optical inside it, too. Now, keep in mind that for a long time,
People who don't know what that means, that's a headphone jack.
It's a headphone jack with an extra ring, actually.
A fancy headphone jack that supports a microphone if you plug in one of those fancy cables.
When I said TRRS, it's tip, ring, ring, sleeve. It's a description of that shaft of connectors. Normally, headphone jacks are tip, ring, sleeve, and it has two rings to support microphone feedback. It's the same as your earbud for an iPhone has those kind of connectors.
And Android, too.
The other thing that Apple's been doing for a long time, I'm not sure if this laptop is, but I'm almost, I mean, the laptops in front of us right now that are Macintosh. Chandler does not have a Macintosh laptop, but he's our intern. We don't allow him on mic until he switches. And anyway, these laptops all have an optical connector in there as well. You can do fiber optic audio.
And how often do you use that?
I used it once.
How often have I used that? Never. Bonnie, have you ever used it?
What? No.
They probably got rid of it, actually.
So I don't know. So I hear the argument about USB. I'm sorry. I hear the argument about floppy drives and optical drives. And I generally agree with them, although I didn't at the time. I think that this is going a little too far because you have this space on the side of your computer. It's not like one USB port or two USB ports are taking up a lot of room.
Yeah.
You know, whereas a floppy drive, oh my gosh, imagine a floppy drive in a laptop these days, in a Mac laptop. That would take up a lot of room and your battery life would be lower or your laptop would be way thicker as a result. Same with optical drives. Huge footprint.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But a port?
Right.
I mean,
especially a C port. It's very small.
Yeah.
The MacBook that's just been released is extremely thin, as you said. It's very light. All that. It also has a Retina screen, which is better than the Airs. Airs don't have Retina screens. It means the pixel density is not really high.
This is
on
a
the
Retina
screen. You have a Retina screen because you're a MacBook Pro.
Oh.
Yeah.
So,
but the Airs don't have that. The Air's battery life is better. The Air is... the baseline Air has more power and the processor intensity power, and it's less expensive. So
there's
it's
a sturdiness
string,
right,
it's
to
less
fancy
expensive to,
ratio there.
Less expensive than the MacBook.
Than the new MacBook.
The new MacBook.
Yeah. Which is weird because you'd think that the MacBook is the way the Air was first positioned is if you've got a lot of money, you know, it's like a high-end, less production but really light laptop. This one's even more so, but it costs more money. So there's this strange...
They're sort of switching the
I'm not
the
sure
tide,
which, yeah. you know, which one you should get kind of thing.
So,
the
yeah.
Air is more for the people.
Yeah. You have a MacBook Pro, Bonnie, because you edit audio. And
right.
you want a processor and multiple cores.
Yeah,
that's a great machine for editing audio, mm-hmm. right? But an Air is a little more challenging for editing audio. I've been working on a processing problem at home, and it's been running 8 days on my Air, and I think it would have ran for a lot less time on a MacBook Pro.
Yeah. There's also the Apple Watch.
Yeah.
So let's talk for a second about the Apple Watch.
Yeah, let's talk about that watch.
We haven't played with it. We don't know it. You
well,
wear a digital
see,
watch.
I thought you had an Apple Watch, but that's your special LeVar Burton Kickstarter Yum Yum watch.
Yes. I have a Pebble, which... no offense to the Pebble team. It does look like it was made in the 90s. It's great for those who like to spend a lot of time in preferences menus.
Time.
Hey. Yeah, I don't know. I like my watch, but it definitely doesn't do all of the new things. It's not an Android watch or a Google watch or whatever. It's not an Apple watch, obviously, because they haven't been released officially yet, but they have been announced. The thing that, just because I'm on a complaining rant...
That's all this I hear about canker sores.
The thing that that bothers me about the watch is that... so it was Robinson Meyer actually put it very well at The Atlantic. He said that Apple's $10,000 watch demonstrates that the company has lost its soul.
Wait, so the $10,000 watch is if you want to be the kind of geek who insists on solid gold stuff.
But that's the thing. The kind of geek who insists on buying the top-of-the-line watch would expect it to be better in some way other than just having a glass or
a gold
wraparound.
Well, I argue that the gold watch is not a better watch. It's just
it's
prettier
a
watch.
Goldener
it's the
watch.
Same watch with more gold.
Yeah, so.
with more
I mean,
gold.
I don't see
but
a reason
markup,
why that's a... I think that that's
but
a...
But you
markups.
Want it to have fancy features too, not special gold watch only features?
I don't know.
Functionality or something?
The markup is obscene. From the amount of gold that's in it and the price that they're charging.
Okay, but
that's
let's not even
watches.
Talk about that because two people are going to get that watch. What about the Apple Watch for everyone?
The Apple Watch for everyone. I mean,
how much does that cost?
Well, we're not a commercial radio, so we really shouldn't be talking much about price. It's really expensive. I mean,
it is
for a watch. You can get a watch that will keep extremely good time for about $15. Right.
So it's not about
so it's
having
not about
a
being a watch, piece. Right?
Right.
The benefits that it can provide for you are going to get it's going to get better and better to provide support. One of the things that's kind of touting is, you know, when you get a room key right now at a hotel and you got to bring that card around.
Mm-hmm.
The newer ones use RFID. They use a system where you still get a temporary card, but theoretically, if hotels were better at what they did, they could actually send you
like
the data to your phone and your watch, and your watch could unlock your room.
So you could beep into your room.
Yeah. So theoretically, yeah. We'll get more and more use out of these things. You can pay via Apple Pay now with this watch. Well, once the watch is actually available.
And it looks like you can check your email and
check email,
send,
text messages.
I'm guessing there's some kind of a speech text function.
You can use
how are
Siri
you going to type
it?
On a watch?
You can use Siri with it and make phone calls, and it will call through your phone. So there's some cool features that aren't like watch features.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
My big hope with this whole watch thing, because Apple's doing it, Google's doing it, pretty much everyone wants to get into this space.
Wearables.
It's what tablets used to be.
Yeah.
Now it's watches. My hope is that instead of making them thinner as quickly as they can, they make the battery life better.
Yes.
Right?
Because your Pebble lasts like a week, right?
Well, my Pebble can last 4 or 5 days.
That's amazing, because Apple Watch is like 8 hours. No, it's actually supposedly a full day.
It's 18 hours. So that means never get less than 6 hours of sleep.
Yeah, really.
Because it needs that.
Plug it in every night.
Or you don't have to wear it whenever you're awake. But you're right.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so that's, I don't know. That's, to me, I feel the same way about smartphones, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my phone, I can get through a day barely, maybe, sometimes not, especially not if I navigate anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought this really fat
Ben
battery pack.
A battery pack taped to his phone.
Now he's got sort of a cyberpunk looking phone.
Well,
awesome.
The tape is for the USB security to keep it. But yeah, so now my phone is like 2.5 times thicker, and it lasts for 3 or 4 days.
I'm jealous.
And that is amazing. That's
it is
what
true
it
that,
used to be in the 90s.
Yeah, it's true that the battery life on portable devices always seems to be lacking.
You know, I should say aughts, not 90s.
The truth is, you know, you don't know if you need more than 18 hours until you need it more than 18 hours. Like, also, that's the watch. That's Apple's announcement of what how long it will last. No one actually is testing the field. The hour usage is always less than what they advertise.
It's like gas mileage that way.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll see.
So, I'm not that concerned about the gold watch. They're not promoting it a bit. I'm interested about this price point. We talked about the price point. I said it's really expensive. It's more than $500 for any of them. You can't start for under $500.
So, it's not for the people. When I say for the people, none of this stuff is for the people yet.
Well, the people that can afford...
For some people.
I mean, people buy $20,000 watches. Some people buy $100 watches. I mean, do you have a piece of jewelry that is worth more than $60?
Yeah,
I personally don't. Maybe my wedding ring.
Yeah.
Because I'm not into jewelry. Once these are available, I will have one because I'm a nerd and I'm going to get one.
Nerd. They took your glass away, but you're going to get the watch.
I still have my glass. If anyone would like to buy Google Glass for me, I'd be happy to sell it for the price of an Apple Watch.
Oh, a trade.
Well, you know, when I was using Google Glass, one of the things I realized what I liked about the most was telling the time quickly at a glance, which a watch does. Amazing. Even the $10 watches do that.
That's a point.
And the secondary thing I love is the camera, which the watch doesn't do. And the tertiary thing that I enjoyed with is having text messages in periphery.
Uh-huh.
And it on the eye was a little too much. It
wasn't
was a little too
also preferred. A good conversation starter because of the novelty.
Well, that's what I love doing about
it's
it.
It's a social
I like,
connector for
I don't know
you.
If you guys knew this, but I like talking about technology
you
a lot.
You do? What?
Yeah.
What? It's Geek Speak here on 88.9 KUSP and KUSP.org. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch in the air room with Ben Jaffe and Lyle Troxell. And we were just talking about Apple stuff. Apparently, there is a sporty version of the Apple Watch that can be got for less than $500. So there you go.
And
it's
I already
still
had,
hundreds.
Yeah, I already had the higher price because I want the better model.
Yeah, so I just want the better
that's just
model.
Me being nerdy. I'm so sorry. Yes,
okay.
It's actually under $400.
All right. Now, it's a lot of excitement about Apple this week, but also a bit of disturbing news.
Yeah, it's nothing we didn't know about. But Siri, you know Siri, you can talk to your phone and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That voice data system has to be done with servers on the back end. And so your voice, when you talk to Siri, actually gets uploaded to a server and processed.
Okay.
And there was a really interesting Reddit piece of a person named Fallen Mist, that's the Reddit user, who claimed that they worked in a facility, and I'll just quote, "I get to listen to sound and rate how the text matches up with what is said in the audio and give feedback on what should be improved." And so the voice that this person listens to at this job she got is Siri, people talking to Siri.
It's people talking, so it's actual stuff that people have said to Siri.
That's right.
Okay.
Walk and Talk Technologies and other similar companies basically are contracted by Apple to help improve the Siri system. And they have human beings confirming what is said versus what Siri thinks is said.
Okay.
And by giving feedback, that's part of the feedback mechanism of computer learning, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Of machine learning?
Because machine learning can't just take a large data set and then just go, right?
It has to learn it as
needs
it goes.
It needs to have some labels associated, like this was correct, this was incorrect, and here's what it should have gotten, you know, et cetera.
Well, that brings to mind the sort of difference between alarmist headlines, like, you know, Siri, what you say to Siri is being sent to third parties, to what that actually means, which is it's making mm-hmm. Siri better. It's not clear to me that anyone's going to be like, okay, who said that? Let me take it down and share their information with
other
people.
It's something we're not surprised
it's
by
for
as
research
geeks.
And development.
We covered the story of the Samsung TV doing the exact same thing, right?
Was that the deal there too?
It's the same deal. I mean, the difference is that it
could send anytime. It could send anytime because you were voice activating the television. So you were saying like, yo, TV, blah, blah, blah. So it was always listening and conceivably could pick up snippets of conversation that it wasn't supposed to hear.
And the point is at the implementation level, it would make a lot more sense to have Siri. When Siri listens all the time, mm-hmm. it will actually have the phrase, hey, Siri, kind of hard coded in the software at the local level. So until it hears that, it's not going to start uploading. The Samsung mm-hmm. TVs probably do the same thing, but maybe not. But the point is that all these license agreements say things like, and this is Apple's iOS software license agreement, by using Siri or dictation, you agree and consent to Apple's and its subsidiaries and agents' transmission, collection, maintenance, processing, and other use of information, including your voice input and user data, to provide and improve Siri dictation, blah, blah, blah. So they always have this kind of caveat.
Mm-hmm.
That caveat has so much power in it that they could do more than probably what they're doing, and that's always the question.
Well, and for me, the concern, there's not real a concern until the government or some other pressuring organization says, hey, we want to use that ability to listen in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's when it gets disturbing for me. And who knows when that's going to happen.
That's right.
But I imagine
or if it's already happening.
Yeah. I mean, hasn't the NSA already been trying to crack Apple code to be able to get into their stuff and peek
There's
around?
Great stories about how much they try to do that.
Oh. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm not done being creeped out yet.
Great
Ben. You
want to
update me on the Lenovo thing? They're all done, right? There's no more superfish problems with Lenovo?
Oh, yeah. So Lenovo was putting on malware, spyware onto computers that people were buying and shipping those computers off to people.
And then they said, oh, no. Sorry, we're not going to do that anymore.
Oh, yeah. Very, very heartfelt.
You don't have to worry.
Press release that says, like, no. Sorry about that. We're really sorry. We want you to trust us. We stopped that.
Mm-hmm.
And that it hasn't installed Superfish since December. But some Ars Technica readers reported that, no, actually, they bought a Lenovo G510 notebook purchased by a neighbor. And it was ordered in early February, over 4 weeks after Lenovo said that they had stopped.
Mm-hmm.
But it came pre-installed with the adware and all of that stuff.
So was that just like leftovers from their inventory? We're not going to put it in there anymore, but we still have all the inventory we're going to move?
See, that's a really great justification that they could give.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's what they're saying. I mean, so to be fair, supply chains and doing all of that is really, it's really difficult to get that right, and it's really difficult to make changes quickly.
Like, yeah.
At the same time, this is a profound issue, and they have to take profound measures to change it.
We're not saying profound.
Yeah, so like if there was a week of latency before the change was implemented, I could understand that.
But
a
it's
month
more than
is
2 months.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, well, it's over a month.
Over a month.
When they ordered the notebook.
All right. Lenovo, unacceptable.
Yeah.
There.
Stop it.
You have been chastised. All right, I need some good news. Let's talk about innovations and good things that are happening.
Oh, this is a wonderful one.
Yeah.
So the Department of Energy, if you will, of the United States, the U.S. Energy Department, has released an analysis of wind energy and its current state and what's going on with it. And wind energy, of course, is giant spinning blades that are generators, right? They produce electricity.
Shoop.
And there's a current goal to have a serious increase of energy to 35% of U.S. electrical supplies in 2050 to be wind energy.
Wait, that's from whom? Whom is?
Oh, so the Department of Energy.
Okay. This is official then.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll just do a quote for you guys. Wind offers a power resource that's already the most competitive option in many parts of the nation.
What's that voice you're doing?
I don't know. Lynn Orr, Undersecretary for the Science and Energy at the Energy Department, said in a conference call with reporters. With continued commitment, the wind can be the cheapest, cleanest power option in all 50 states by 2050. That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Right now, it's not the cheapest, but it's been declined. It's been getting better and better. Well, so, for example, what were you going
to
say?
Well, my head goes right to people objecting to having to look at those things or have them within field of vision, which I don't understand because my favorite part of any road trip on Highway 5 is going past all the windmills.
Absolutely.
In Livermore.
The cost of operating a wind farm in 2008 cost $71 per megawatt hour. So that's how much megawatt hours generation cost was. Mm-hmm. It has dropped by a third to 2013. It's $45 a megawatt hour. Mm. And they assume that by increasing the heights of towers and such, they should be able to drop it as much as 50%. The new towers are 150 meters tall. These are really tall towers. The higher off the ground you get, the higher current flow, I guess.
More
you get.
Wind.
Yeah. So we're seeing some pretty serious success in wind, and it looks like it's going to beat the price of natural gas power supplies in 2017. So we're doing really well with racing carbon footprint stuff with wind. I remember years ago there was a concern about wind energy that turbines can kill birds.
Yeah, that's the other place I went to, is little chopped up birdies.
Yeah, and it's true that every once in a while a bird will hit a wind tower. Ooh. And it's potentially a problem. But keep in mind that we love cats in the United States. And if everyone kept their cat inside one day, you would the numbers go that you would save more birds than for 10 years of wind farms, right? So it's like, forget about the problem with wind farms. It's actually a kitty cat problem.
Take that, cat owners.
The thing I'm more concerned about is, will it actually stop? Like, maybe we won't have wind anymore because we're sucking all the energy out of the wind. And then
my head went to, like, instead of rooftop gardens in the city, there'd be like windmill gardens at the top of skyscrapers. Can you imagine?
That'd be great.
Yeah.
They're already tall.
Just put some wind stuff up there.
Get on it, man.
Yeah.
So,
all right. So that's interesting innovation going on.
There's
there.
Also tax credit benefits for people that want to put up wind farms. So it's really kind of cool if you're in a windy area. Mm. It doesn't work in all areas,
okay.
Of course.
Okay. Hmm. Interesting.
I would love to do that.
Let's talk more about things being made and innovation and therefore things getting potentially cheaper.
I have the best story ever, especially if you can see it. So go to geekspeak.org and watch it while you're listening to this story or later on in the day. So this guy named Eric Harrell in Santa Cruz, California.
No kidding.
Yes, no kidding.
Local innovator.
Yeah. 3D printed a working 5-speed transmission for a Toyota 22RE engine. So this is a scale replica of a manual transmission. And looking at the video, it is just absolutely incredible that this thing works.
Oh, so it's not an actual one that he could plop right into the Toyota, but it's a scaled down version.
Yeah, yeah.
It does all the things, but smaller.
Exactly. And, okay. And depending on, so one of the really cool things about this is that if you go to 3dprint.com, you can actually download the schematics for this and then tell your 3D printer, if you have one,
to go poop,
to print this
actual
thing.
Size.
And it takes like 48 hours to print all of these pieces.
Yeah.
So
then you have to put them together.
Oh, yeah, and putting it together is the hard part.
Craft time with the kiddies.
So who has put together a transmission? I haven't, but as far as I understand, it's very complicated.
Well, you could practice on this before trying to attack your real car.
Now, that's actually one of the cool things about this is that because this is a scale replica, you can actually do that.
Yeah.
Like, you could figure out how to put together a transmission by playing around with these little plastic pieces. So that's 48 hours of print time to print out all of the individual pieces. And then you have to assemble them, and it's not necessarily very easy to do that. But by the time that you're done, you can actually shift gears, and you can see the output change speed and everything. And he says, actually, quote, "The transmission works exactly like most manual transmissions found in any truck or car. However, I can barely explain how it works. It's fairly hard to grasp unless you assemble one or see an animation of one opened up." So...
Yeah. So he has like an unboxing video for his transmission.
I would love to see how this works.
Yeah.
So if you happen to be listening, Eric Carroll of Santa Cruz, California.
Oh.
That would be such a fun geek field trip to
geek
go
field trip.
And see this actually working.
I love it.
And if you're not listening, I guess I'm just going to have to go and buy a 3D printer and print one of my own because I can.
All right. Well, it's you out there who are listening right now and know Eric. Put us in touch.
And just a general comment. How empowering is this? Like, you can 3D print real things, replicas of real things to understand how they work. You can 3D print pieces that, you know, maybe a piece on your Scotch tape opener broke. And so, you know, you just go find a blueprint.
Schematic.
Yeah. A file on the computer and tell your computer to print one. That's incredible.
That's awesome. The 3D printed dream is alive and well. Let's talk about back to power.
Yeah.
Back to power, and then I want to go back to cars. But
Bonnie, do you know Seto, the goddess of the dangers of the sea, the Greek goddess of the dangers of the sea? Seto?
We are not personally acquainted.
Well, I wasn't aware of it either until I read this wonderful story about Australia using the motion of the ocean to generate zero emissions electricity and also desalinate water.
Oh, I have heard about this.
Yeah.
How does it work, though? Because I just saw a headline or something. I didn't
so you
really
basically take a large buoyant thing and you chain it down to the bottom of the ocean and you put it at a level where the currents are going to move it back and forth.
Okay. I'm with you so far.
And here's a picture, and we'll have this up on geekspeak.org in moments.
So these they look like little mines or something.
Yeah. And as they get pushed back and forth and tugged, that movement actually causes the chain to pull and contract along inside its container, and it uses that to generate electricity and also to pump water through the water movement. Excuse me, the movement of the water through the system causes electricity to be generated, and that goes through a filter, and the filter is actually pulling out salt. So it's a desalination and power generation tool.
Wait, how much desalination? Could this solve Santa Cruz's problems?
These are still a test try. Yeah. The project's called Seto. They're on Seto 5 for the fifth generation of the system.
Okay.
They're entirely submerged 240 kilowatt buoys. And the thing that's cool about this is that because they're completely submerged, they don't affect the skyline, right? You could have them out in the ocean and you wouldn't actually notice it. There's a video about how it actually works, which is kind of cool. And we'll have all of this up at geekspeak.org.
Okay.
Channel throws it up.
That's locally relevant.
And it has a number of potential commercial advantages over wave power generating systems that are normally wall-based. They're more modular. They can move around. You can pull them out and clean them and organize them. Mm-hmm. So, it's pretty cool. The Australian Energy Minister Ian McAflare is excited about this ebb and flow of the ocean as a more reliable source of power than comparable green energy systems such as wind and solar. So he's, of course, when you got ocean all around, it's always nice to.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah, definitely.
But it'd be good for coastal areas.
And they're already planning on a Seto 6, which is even better, and so on. So we'll see more.
I imagine somebody here has got their eye on that.
I always feel like we don't take advantage of wave motion as much as we could. You know, we got the moon slowly leaving our orbit anyway, so we might as well take advantage of it.
Well, we still can.
I don't know if I understand entirely how this works. Can I 3D print one?
Don't know.
And use it in my bathtub.
Eventually.
Use it in your bathtub. Check it out. Add salt first to bathtub. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay, back to cars. Now, there's been this whole thing about the Uberization of the economy being a way for people to earn a fast dollar, but also maybe get screwed out of benefits and other employee num-nums that are quickly eroding anyway.
Yeah, some people don't like Uber.
Well, and there's kind of a skeevy quotient there, right? Like people taking advantage of people by being Uber drivers and being nasty. So it's been an opportunity for other companies like Lyft.
Yeah, Lyft is an Uber competitor, and they've also been around for quite a while. They're just not as big as Uber. Uber is huge, 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 huge. Well, good news for competition. And also, personally, I like Lyft, mainly because I don't like Uber as much. They just raised $530 million in a funding round. $530 million with an M. That's half $1 billion. That's a lot of money.
Okay.
It's a lot of money for a startup. Oh, my gosh.
And so what, though?
I care because that means that they're going to be able to compete a little bit better. You know, because if you have two companies in an area, you want them both to be healthy and thriving, because that encourages competition, and hopefully that also encourages
improvement them in the industry overall.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, all right.
Is Lyft completely comparable to Uber in that you can, you know, open up an app and say, I need a ride, and then somebody comes and drives you, and then the app gets paid through the service? So it's very similar.
Yeah, they at least used to have pink mustaches on the front of their cars.
Which,
I'm not sure if they still do.
I have to say, big turnoff.
Really? Yeah. Don't like pink?
Well, big pink mustache, first of all, the handlebar mustache trend is going to go out of style, and then when will there be? And also just kind of... Yeah.
Pink hats, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I get that it's sort of like a fun, mm-hmm. you know, they're doing like a fun thing. But it also just seems like a crass grabbing of
contemporary
hipster cult, iconography. Yeah. So yeah.
I actually heard of Lyft before Uber. I thought it was before.
Yeah, me too.
Uber,
right. Yeah, me too.
But,
yeah.
By the way, they did actually drop the pink furry mustache, and they debuted the glow stash. I'm just clicking on this story.
Okay,
I don't know
so
even
we're
what
still
that
on the
means.
Stash. Okay.
But, 5-inch long
just
pink
eyebrows for your lip, Bonnie.
Yeah,
eyebrows
know,
for your
but
lip.
For your car grill.
Okay, it goes on your, it goes on the dashboard.
Okay.
So they have
it's
a
smaller
new,
now.
New small pink 5-inch long pink mustache that goes on your dashboard or something.
Okay, whatever.
I don't know, whatever.
I mean, I get it. It's a signifier, right? So you can tell what's a Lyft car and what's just a creepy stranger that you're about to be
harmed
by.
And they can't put the word Lyft on because it's got that Y and it seems weird to read it that way. So they can't use their name. That would be weird.
Yeah, I don't know why they can't just get like Lyft magnet car magnets and top it on.
Anyway, that makes me happy because they did not have this much money.
Now, and what do they do with this? What does that mean?
Basically, they've more than doubled the amount of money that they've raised. So that's pretty good.
Okay.
Now they're valued at $2.5 billion, so hopefully they'll do well.
All right. Well, that's it. This has been Geek Speak for this date, Pi Day 3/14/15. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission. And Geek Speak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0, so reuse our stuff any way you like. Just tell them the geeks say hi and cite your sources. This is Public Radio for the Central Coast, 88.9 KUSP Santa Cruz, live online at KUSP.org. To find out more about this or any episode of Geek Speak, please visit us at geekspeak.org and contact us. Let's talk. Email us at geeks@geekspeak.org. Contact us on Twitter. The Pi Day discussion continues at Twitter. We're at KUSP Geeks. Our theme song is by Michael Newman of Pet Star Music. And I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch with Lyle Troxell and Ben Jaffe. Thanks to our intern, Chandler. And thank you for being here for this episode of Geek Speak.